and not giving them control of the property. This is what you guys understand. We have the checkbook. We write the checks. So I don't really understand what the debate's about. And some of us, the last time I checked, we lived in a free country, not a socialist country, a free country that values individual producers. What incentives are we giving to people to produce if all our government does is take our money, take our capital, take our property? It's time to stop it. This is chaos. I would pay my mortgage before I would pay my cable bill. It's time for the government to do the same. And I can stay within my budget if I get double my budget every year. Let's wake up, people. Let's do the right thing. Let's give the people a voice. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Lovins. Neil Connor, followed by Eric Wall. Mr. Connor, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for your time today. I appreciate it. I came up here from Gainesville. And just wanted to say, I am a college student. I am also a small business owner. And as a college student, I have a limited budget. But what money I do have, I invest in my small business in the hopes of one day making it nicely profitable. But we face enough problems as it is. We've got this national recession. We have the IRS to worry about, inflation. And our business is located in one of the highest tax counties in this state, and I don't believe that we'll be able to afford this ever. It's a never-ending trend, it seems like, and it's going to keep on going if this Taxpayer Protection Act is not enacted. And you know, owning your own business, being able to make it for yourself, make something of yourself, start your dreams in America, being free, that's the American dream. But where will the American dream go if I'm not able to work for myself anymore, if I'm not able to afford starting up my own local business, and instead I have to work for a giant multinational corporation? That's not right. I heard a couple of people, you know, just joking, he looks so young, how could he possibly pay so much taxes? But taxes are built into everything we do. It affects the entire economy, whether it's on one sector, it transfers elsewhere. It's in the price that I pay for food, it's in the price that I pay for gasoline, the rent of my apartment, my insurance, and most importantly, the job opportunities out there. I would hate it if, once I graduate from this great Florida university, if I'm not even able to find a decent job in my own state and have to consider leaving this sunny, beautiful state of Florida. And so I'm here to urge you to please vote for the Taxpayer Protection Amendment for the future citizens of Florida, for myself, for your children, for your grandchildren, so that we could at least have the same economic opportunity as you yourselves did. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Garner. I spot a budding politician there. Eric Wall, followed by Sherman Platt.
Eric's gone.
Eric's gone. Okay, Sherman Platt.
Sherman's gone too.
You guys know them all, huh? Okay. Who is this?
Mister, I really want to thank you for everything that you're doing today. I want to thank you for being here and considering to see people apply. However, a lot of people here from Jacksonville have stolen my thunder. So I wanted to express my opportunity of gratefulness and thank you all. I yield back my time.
Okay, great. Super. Randy Wilkinson, followed by Don Schroeder. Randy Wilkinson. Okay, Johnny's not here, so let's go with Don Schroeder, followed by Patrick Stover. Mr. Schroeder, welcome again.
Thank you very much, Mr. I'll try and hold the comments to year in a short time period. Just to respond to Taylor in Colorado for as I asked you, I've got two daughters out there, got eight grandchildren, believe it or not, between the two of them. Only one has left of those eight grandchildren and has gone to Seattle to follow a. But we're not happy about it, but he's in the Hard Rock Band, so he's in Seattle. But everybody else has stayed. My two daughters lived out there for many years. They raised a family there. They love Colorado. They're not about to come even down here to visit me in Florida. I have to go visit them in Colorado. Tabor has worked in Colorado. But in Florida, we have been really taxed to death. We know that. I am speaking also just to the Landlords Association in Sarasota. Many of those landlords and government have increased, have seen a 200% increase in taxes from 2001 to 2007. Their combined taxes have grown to state, county, city, and schools. They've grown well beyond our population and our CPI growth have been. I've looked at the numbers, we're at 200%, and we're still growing. We need a government. I know we've talked about representative government. The government is not just being responsible. They're representing us, but they're not being responsible to the needs of the community. They have taken huge amounts of money, and the lack of control has contributed to the present economic hurricane that the state is facing. They have not been putting the money into reserves. They've gone ahead and they've spent it, and that's why our economy is floating where it is today. We are sinking. We have to look at our budgets and our way we run our government as a business. We have a CEO, we have a board of directors, and we have the stockholders. And the stockholders are upset, and they are going to sign. In Manistee County, we have four commissioners up, and all four of them, for the first time since I've lived there since 1986, they've got somebody running against them. And in fact, one of them has got two people running against them. There's more to this, though, than just immediately doing it. Last week, he took CP002 and he passed it. I'm looking forward to it. But CP2, the value and the economies of CP002 will be forthcoming, will be gone within 5 to 7 years if we do not have CP0045. It's imperative that happens to us. Without the controls that you are looking at doing, and I thank Commissioner Hogan for his effort, but we need the teeth put in there. They need to be stronger, or we're not going to have the benefits of the McKay proposal and what you were forecasting. I thank you for your time. But we have a chance for public comment when you come back afterwards.
I think we're
pretty well talked out.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the time. Patrick Silver and Cindy Laquita. Patrick Silver, welcome.
Thank you. It's an honor to speak to you today. My name is Patrick Stolfer. I'm currently a sophomore at the University of Central Florida. In a couple years from now, I'm going to have a pretty great opportunity, basically to start a new career. And, you know, when I start my life in the real world, I'm going to have an opportunity to basically live anywhere I want. I can move and really have a chance to start my life wherever in the country I'd like to. And some of the things I'm going to look for in the new city I live in, are basically job growth. I want to know I'm going to have a job when I get there. Positive economic growth. I want to know that the city I'm going to live in is going to be thriving, and it's going to be thriving for the foreseeable future. I want to know that, you know, my new hard-earned paychecks aren't going to be taxed away by a bloated and oversized government. And I want to know, as, you know, someone who's interested in politics, I want to know that I'm going to have a voice in my local government. And one of the things when I look at this list is that the Taxpayer Protection Amendment basically provides for all of these things. It's going to provide them for everyone in the state of Florida. So not only is this an amendment that's going to provide positive growth for all families in Florida and provide an increased voice for the citizenry, but this is also something that's going to provide a positive incentive for myself and the hundreds of thousands of other college students who are going to be graduating, going into the workforce soon. This is going to be a positive incentive to basically stay in the state of Florida and use their new knowledge that they gained in Florida universities for the positive economic growth of the state. So with that, I'd like to urge you all to vote for the taxpayer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stouffer. We're going to give Mr. Conner a run for his money one day. Next is Rodney Long, after Cindy
Lacodera. Yes, thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. And thanks to the commission, and thanks also to Commissioner Hogan for his efforts in this. I represent the city of Jacksonville. I'm from the Office of General Counsel. We appreciate the work of Commissioner Hogan and continuing to work with him to tweak it because of the unique situation of Jacksonville. We have, as Mr. Bates has stated, we have held to 3% from 1991 until 2006 when one increase was made by the mayor about 3%. We have cut non-public safety full-time employees by 10% in that 10-year period from 96 to 2006. There are surgical cuts, and there's input from Commissioner Hogan that will help. There's input from the people here, some of whom I know from city council meetings at the town, and they give us valuable information. We appreciate it. We'd like it to continue. But it's like to put this particular bill in this particular form onto the city of Jacksonville is like editing page 75 of a 300-page book. Now, one edit looks really good, but it doesn't make the rest of it make any sense. And so we need your help as we work with Commissioner Hogan, as we work with some of our taxpayers, to tweak it so that it does make sense. So you can have tax relief and tax reform that's applicable to the city of Jacksonville. It's important to note that we have 225,000 registered voters in Duval County. I represent also the supervisor of elections. I think they were all there yelling at each other in 2004. I think what we need on those voters is a recognition that they turned down the last constitutional amendment for greater homestead exemption. So it's not the number of people standing in front of the podium. It's the input and the actual math and the actual balancing. We have the highest voter rate in the state of Florida. And how we address that is something we need flexibility for. When we have cut the full-time equivalent of non-public safety employees, and we have increased that budget by 19% for public safety, but not enough. We have sheriff asking for 400 additional officers. Do we need them? We're working on it. Do we have a murder rate as a crisis? Yes. Is it so in one part of the city for which we may not be able to garner 2/3 of the vote? Yes. Because when we have 862 square miles, sometimes votes are parochial to your neighborhood, to your infrastructure needs versus the police needs in a different part of town. And that's a recognition you have to have on politics. And one again, of which we're working with Commissioner Hogan, because if you know him, you know public safety is very important to him, and he would not jeopardize it. So we appreciate your time on this, and we will continue to work with Commissioner Hogan and with our electorate to see if we can tweak it to get the effective tax relief we all need while maintaining the safety and the construction needs for Duval County. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming over here. Next we have Rodney Long, followed by Betsy Morland. Welcome, Mr. Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Rodney Long. I'm the first vice president of the Florida Association of Counties. I'm here today to speak on behalf of the Florida Association of Counties. I want to thank each of you for allowing us to continue this public discourse on tax relief. I want to thank Commissioner Hogan for allowing us to come and to speak specifically to the bill before us today. Commissioner Hogan, in his opening remarks, mentioned one of the reasons that he's sponsoring this proposal. He indicated that we want to make sure that we deal with excessive growth. I want to remind the members of this commission that as a part of tax reform last year, the legislature capped us in June of last year, statutorily by making sure that we didn't raise our property taxes. Also, on January 29th, I want to remind you that the voters of the state put in place Amendment 1.
if you were to look at the statutory caps, as well as Amendment 1, local governments will put forth $25 billion in tax relief, $15 billion come from capitalism. Mr. Chairman, I've got a few questions about the bill. I don't know how we address the question. I got a couple of questions. Can I ask a couple of questions about the bill?
No, this is strictly public debate.
Okay.
Public testimony.
Okay. Well, on the line.
Feel free, sir. Feel free to go up to the sponsor after the meeting.
Okay, well, for clarification, if I'm reading this bill, I don't know whether or not this is a either-or bill, whether the actual electors are the only ones to vote for tax increases or a supermajority vote of the elected body. Because in this particular bill, it has an either-or, it appears to me. On line number 29, it says that no taxes or fees can be increased by the electorate of the people. Then on line 175, it gives a provision for supermajority vote of the elected body. So I'm not really sure whether or not this bill is solely a bill where only the electorate can vote on whether or not property taxes or fees can be increased. The other thing I'm not real sure of is if I were to assume that only the electorate can vote for any type of increase, then I would suggest to you that every time the clerk of court wants to raise any type of fee, the government wants to raise garbage fees or any type of fines, we would have to have a referendum. If that is indeed the case, and I'm not real sure reading the language here, if that's the case, the same taxpayers who we're trying to give relief to would have to pay for all of these referendums. So I urge you to, for clarity, try to clarify this, but I'm reading this the first time today, I'm not real sure. And maybe I can get a chance to speak with Mr. Hogan after to try to get a clarification. So I appreciate your time, Mr. Chairman.
Good. Thank you, Ms. Long, and for the records, Ms. Long is an Alachua County Commissioner. Getting over here. Betsy Marble, followed by David Vidal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Commission. I'm a member of SEIU Healthcare Florida and an RN at St. Mary's Medical Center in West Palm Beach. SEIU represents service workers in Florida, working in healthcare, industry, property services, and public employees. We appreciate the time and effort you are putting into finding a solution that supports our local services while providing accountability in our government. However, CP45 will not do this. Instead, CP45 would put a mathematical equation into our Constitution that doesn't guarantee responsibility in spending. This proposal instead will slowly reduce the amount of revenue that will cut at the necessary services of our community, such as healthcare. The reality is that healthcare costs have been rising faster than inflation and consumer prices. With an aging population, more complex medical technology, and higher drug costs, capping revenue will lead only to cuts in quality of care, no matter how responsible our governments try to be. Already today, you talked about providing resources to transportation and education. Why should we then propose to do the opposite? There's no cap on the amount of patients we must care for in Florida in our hospitals and nursing homes, their health care needs, or the many other vital services our communities rely on. We need to be very cautious about placing rigid equations into our Constitution. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Marble. Next is David Bidoff, followed by Cindy Stevenson. Mr. Bidoff, welcome.
Thank you. My name is David Bidoff. I'm from New Smyrna Beach, Florida. I'm with American Prosperity. And I'd like to comment on Commissioner Hogan's final point on why you should support 45. And that is, should the government constitutionally have the ability to grow taxes faster than our ability to pay? And that's really the heart of the question that's before you. And you have two choices. You can either place some sort of a cap in the Constitution, or propose it, I should say, or you can do nothing. And I'd like to share with you a story on why I think you should consider a cap and place it into the voters. In the mid-80s, my wife and I and our in-laws purchased a house together in but the idea was that they would live it in it as long as they could. And then when they were done with it, we would take it over. And at the time, my in-laws made a fixed income of $15,000 a year. And they had property taxes in the mid-80s of about $780. So it was about 5-6% of their income was going for property taxes. My mother-in-law became a widow, and in 6 years, her taxes went to $4,800. That was a little over a third of her income was going to pay property taxes, and she basically did the wall, could not afford to stay at home. That's when I met Wolfenstein. In other words, the government at that point, the Constitution, allowed for unlimited increases in property taxes simply based on market conditions. My wife and I basically bought out my mother-in-law's interest by taking out a mortgage on the third house, and we thought we'd sell our first house and everything would be fine. But two things happened. I understand somebody else in the commission had this option, but the lake behind our house in Orlando disappeared over a weekend. And we had to sit on three mortgages for a year. The taxes on our home that we bought from my mother-in-law exceeded our payment by about 50%. The payment was $350 and the taxes were like $400 a month. And for 2 years, we had the privilege of being without air conditioning in our car and in our house because of three mortgages and taxes that actually exceeded our mortgage payment. I became kind of a believer at that point that if we allow government to raise taxes faster than the ability of the people to pay, that there are very serious consequences. And if you could imagine what would have happened in this state without Save Our Homes, the carnage that would have fallen ordinary people in a run-up in the bubble of housing that we had, it would be unimaginable. And I know that people have criticized Save Our Homes because it shifts taxes. And in fact, homeowners do pay it up more taxes than in older homes. The fact is that that constitutional provision did protect every single homeowner from ever having their taxes go up more than 3 or 4% a year. Yes. I have given you two handouts here. One is 10 reasons why you should support CP45. The other one is, if you do nothing, and government is allowed, as it has in the last 10 years, if you allow government to grow faster than the ability of the citizens to pay, here are the consequences because of the power of compounding. If we grew taxes 3% faster than our ability to pay in 50 years, in two generations basically, 50% of our income would go for state and local taxes. And as Ken Wilkinson said to me the other day on the phone, he said, well, that can't possibly happen unless you do nothing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Biddle. Cindy Stevenson, followed by Laura Donaldson. Cindy, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and I apologize I did not have prepared notes. I had not intended to talk at this group today. I am a certified public accountant. I am a third-year county commissioner. St. John's County experienced a significant change in the county commission, and I think it in some part had to do with this full responsibility. We are one of the counties that was punished heavily for when we grew. I think if the look on the recent legislation had been longer, we would have found that our when our tax increases occurred and our growth in tax base occurred, would have been more comparable to other areas. But I just wanted to share with you, I voted against my budget in the minority 3 years ago. When the new majority came in, we repealed some of the bond projects that went in that we thought were not wise uses of people's capital. Since then, our commission has cut $24 million, which is a significant amount from about a $180 million budget, enough to give our average taxpayer a $100 tax decrease. In a county that's growing and has an existing infrastructure deficit is still working in a rapidly urbanizing setting to go from a volunteer fire department to having a regular fire department. That's a very big challenge. We still have not implemented the Clean Water Act, and we were apprised this year that our OPEB liability is $11 million a year. So we are also dealing in a changing environment. And I appreciate all the discussion today, and everybody who accepted the local government, but every time the federal government and the state government actually passes legislation, you can almost be assured it's going to hit me, just like it hits businesses. And we are implementing the Clean Water Act faster in our road construction. It is driving those things, it's driving those costs. It's important to protect our water, but I think we have to think about what's happening at all levels of government. My observation as an outsider, certainly not part, I'm not a bureaucrat, is that we spend a very small amount on quality of life issues that really our community really appreciates. Libraries, parks, and things that are important to the whole state of Florida. Beach access, river access, things that make that part of the reason people come to live and visit in Florida. When the mandates come down, where over half of my budget is in public safety and the other mandates that we have and the existing decisions that were made, you know, I'm stuck with a lot of capital overhead from decisions that were made in the past. Mine may have $5 million of discretionary income in a year. Until we get into a situation like this, the tax reform has been good because it's really made a shape for us, and that's been important. But I would just like to make this observation, that people are not just unhappy with local government. To them, government's just like the road network. When they get off of a local road, onto a state road, or onto a federal highway, they really don't notice the difference. And when they pay our taxes, they don't really know where it came from, whether it's a federal mandate or a state mandate. But I'm telling you, it all comes down to the local government, and it affects us. I'm very concerned about some of the comments about tolls and road building. I have a $750 billion regional road need that I'm looking to figure out how to fulfill in the next 20 years. And that is going to hold back the job opportunities for these fine people that are here talking. I have an 18-year-old and a 19-year-old. I'm very concerned about our rural competitiveness. And so as you make these decisions, it's not just about meeting demands from taxpayers. It is about our global competitiveness, and we need to have a tax system that integrates and allows us to be competitive, because that is a question that will be answered regardless of whether it passes a legislative voter's referendum or not. It's one of those forces that we cannot be ignored. On my way over here,
if you can wrap up.
I will. On my way over here, many others may have had this experience. I stopped at a McDonald's for coffee in the middle of the night and was told, when I apologized because they couldn't hear me over the loud car, they told me the order taker was in West Indiana. When we can outsource lawyer jobs and we can outsource order takers in McDonald's in a rural area between here and Jacksonville, we're in a really tough shape. I appreciate your indulgence. And on the fees, we do have a fee that we are trying to do to increase efficiency. So somehow it also needs some away of that.
Laura Donaldson, followed by Stephen Burton.
Mr. Chair. Commissioner. My name is Laura Donaldson. I'm special counsel to an independent special fire control district in Collier County. And I know there was some debate and there's some confusion between independent special districts and dependent special districts and MSTU. And there's a representative who's going to speak on behalf of all the independent special districts in Florida. But my comments are going to be limited to the North Coast Fire Control District and there's 57 independent special fire control districts. Most of you don't know about them. They're only in 11 counties, mostly in the Panhandle and down and Lee County, Collier, Manatee. And it was interesting, a couple of people talked and said, they need to ask us to take our money. And you know what? Independent special fire control districts have done exactly that. In order to become an independent special fire control district in the state of Florida, you have to have a special act that's approved by the legislature. That special act sets the millage rate. The special act goes back to the residents of this new district. They have to approve the creation of the district, and the millage rate. My fire control district, North Naples, we have a 1 mil cap right now. Statutorily, we're allowed to go to 3.75 mils, but we've been approved at 1 mil. I cannot raise ad valorem taxes unless it's approved at referendum. I can't raise non-ad valorem assessments unless I originally go to the residents of my district and ask to have it approved. And so I know that, you know, we appreciate Commissioner Hogan, you excluding the independent special districts because we are different. We are not the MSTUs that are being pulled out from the county or city budgets. We have been created by the people. For North Naples, we're an elected board. We serve 80,000 people. Our budget is $26 million. It's a very big budget. 78% is personnel costs. We have 149 certified firefighters and 17 staff, so we're not top heavy. We actually, last session, we were talking about property taxes. We had 155 firefighters. We've had six leave, and we are not replacing them because of Amendment 1, property tax reform, and we're somewhat concerned about what's going to happen this session and what you do. Over 5 years, health insurance has gone up 35% per employee. Retirement, 166%. And when I asked my assistant chief, she said, yes, Laura, 166%. Now, these aren't extra benefits that we're just giving. I know pension for firefighter and police are issues. We are required to meet the state pension requirements. If FRS gives it to a firefighter, we have to give it to a firefighter. So we have no chance to avoid that. Utilities, 48%. Building maintenance, 49%. Vehicle fuel, 57%. I had my chairman out last week, and he said, I don't think people understand. We can't say we only want 10 fires this month. We can only budget to respond to 10 fires or 10 emergencies. We're not allowed to do that. We are a single-purpose local government, and I just wanted to conclude real quickly. One, as independent special fire control districts decrease the number of employees, our level of service will decrease. We'll have a different ISO rating, and there is the potential that people's homeowners insurance are going to go up. Also, I wanted to give you an example. There was an area of Manatee County that wanted to have a professional fire district.
They wrap it up, please.
They were volunteers. The county didn't want to get them anymore, volunteers. So what they did is they came to the legislature, created a new independent special district, and they voted to tax themselves. And that is what independent special districts do. So as you go through the week, I know a lot of you don't have to deal with independent special districts, but we are different. We are approved by the electors. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Fonsi. Members, we have two more folks to go through before we will hit all the out-of-town folks. And I think we're going to wrap up after we get the out-of-town folks. So if I'd entertain a motion to extend for 10 more minutes so we can take care of the last two. Do you have a second? Anyone opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Burke, yeah. You all recognize. We're going to go to Tracy Allen, who's on the telephone, who's been holding for hours.
My name is Steve Burden. I'm from Tampa. I think I'm the only person so far that's over from Tampa or anywhere in the region. I think we see a few more. Trying to make something real quick. One, as far as I understand it, in 1994, we had, and we still have in our Constitution, a revenue cap. It's been dysfunctional because it was based on the concepts of income increase, personal income increase. Okay, so the cap always stayed above whatever the spending was. The other thing that was happening was the slice of the budget that actually came underneath that cap got smaller and smaller and smaller every year. Those are the two things that we need to have. Those are the two things that we need to have in CP45. And those are the two things that we're losing. We're losing the spending cap because there was only a revenue cap in 94. We're losing the spending cap, and we're also starting to allow all these exceptions for things that don't fall into this. This doesn't fall under the cap. Pretty soon we have everything that doesn't fall under the cap. Okay, that's the first point. The second point is I'm retired military. My pay raises, okay, are based on CPI. And everybody that gets Social Security, their pay raises is based on CPI. I seem to be able to manage my money based on CPI. It seems like the government should have to also. Okay, so we're talking about managing by the same methodologies and techniques. The other thing is that I mitigate my risk as best I can as a citizen. Okay, if I know I'm possibly going to face this, I will put money away in the bank in order to handle it. If the local governments realize that, hey, we're going to have to go to the voter and actually get their approval, why can't they do the same thing? Put aside a small amount of the funds so that they can fund any kind of referendums if they need them in an emergency. Okay, these are all things that you do and have to think of as a private citizen managing your own checkbook. So it seems like government should be expected to do the same thing. But thank you very much for what you're doing, and we really need to strengthen CP 45 and get spending coverage back into it, but we also need to have it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Burton. Next, we have Tracy Allen on the phone with the Florida Hurricane Cat Fund. Ms. Allen, welcome.
Can you hear me?
I think we can hear you fine.
Okay, great. I appreciate this opportunity. We really appreciate the effort that's gone into this, creating this proposal and Amendment 1. And Amendment 1, we're going to support that because of all our concerns that we had with the proposal 45. There is one final issue that I wanted to raise, and that's on lines 196 and 197, where it states that to the extent that the revenues do not subsidize other components of a state or local government, these governmental entities will not be subject to the cap. The Florida Hurricane Catastrophe Fund does have money appropriated each year from its investment income by the legislature. The minimum is $10 million. It can go up as high as 35% of the investment income of the fund. And this money is used by the legislature and is distributed to local government, state agencies, public and private educational institutions, and even nonprofit organizations to promote programs that would reduce hurricane costs. And that could be education, research, access funding, repairs to houses, structural changes, supporting local infrastructure improvements that would help guard against hurricanes. And I didn't know if that might be viewed as a subsidy for another fund that would take a local government. And that's all I meant to say, and I appreciate you letting me have this opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Allen. We appreciate it. Is there anyone else from out of town that drove and flew here today to testify? We want to make sure we don't make you come back again. Okay, our current posture is Commissioner Hogan had temporarily postponed Amendment Number 1. Commissioner Hogan, do you have a motion to temporarily postpone CP 45? The bill itself. Just may have 8 minutes to take it up.
Yes,
sir. You don't want to vote
now. A lot of people left, I see. Yes, sir, I would move that we pass it.
Without objection, show the CP 45 temporary postponement. A couple of housekeeping issues. Folks, we'll pick up again next Friday. The issues that will come up on the agenda next Friday, we will pick up CP 45. We'll pick up CP 40 by Commissioner Turbeville. We will take up CP 35, Local Option Taxes for Community Colleges by Governmental Services Committee. We'll take up CP 0016, Conservation Assessments by Commissioner Yablonski. We'll take up CP 51, Special District Limits by Commissioner Riley. CP 26 by Commissioner Turbeville, dealing with 65% capacity funding. CP 27 by Commissioner Hogan. Commissioner Rousson, CP 0022. So we have a pretty full agenda. We may ask you to come earlier. I think the tent was set to begin next Friday at 10 o'clock.
Good.
We're here. We're going to meet here. So we may, this room right here. So we may move that back to an earlier time, which means everyone might want to think about coming in Thursday evening. We're not sure. We'll play that by ear. I also want to make sure, members, let's talk again about amendments and later file amendments. Next Friday is our last meeting. I will tell you, if I see a handwritten late file amendment, I'm going to be real nervous unless it is absolutely simple as pie. Because, again, we are looking at changing our Constitution of Florida. That's a major issue that should be thought out well in advance. You can, if you haven't been that you want to run, get them to staff early on so they can be spread a little bit, look at, and also be interested to see what they're doing. Because again, this is some pretty significant public policy. I don't anticipate we'll be after next Friday. However, if we have pending issues that we just can't get to, then certainly there's nothing that says we can't meet. But it's sort of like the last day of session. You've got to have a final date at the point at which you really begin to make some votes. So having said that, any comments? Commissioner Hope?
In your comments just a second ago that late ballot amendment and so forth, I was hoping today that we'd have enough time to get input from individual members that may have a particular heartache with 45. And so I hope that they have a suggestion that they would file that. We expect to meet Monday and Tuesday next week with staff to get everything addressed.
Okay. Any more comments? I'm sorry, Commissioner Barnett.
No, just an observation more than anything else, Mr. Chairman. Based on experience today and our last meeting on issues that are important and complex and that have a lot of public interest, it takes a lot of time. In fact, it takes more time than I think any of us really anticipate in order to be open and available to the public, which is an important component of our constitutional challenge. And with all due respect, I don't think you can accomplish the agenda that you just went over in one day, even if we start at 8 in the morning and go to midnight. And I think in order, because all of us have more to do than we can say grace over right now with the legislature and professional lives, I think it would be, I believe it would be prudent to go ahead and look at a possible another day if we have to, and let members know as soon as possible so that we can give these issues the deliberation we need.
We will be looking at an alternate date. Any more input?
Well, let's look for the 5th.
Excuse me?
Will that alternate date be before the 5th?
No, we can't. Yeah. Okay, Commissioner LaCoste.
I would be willing, if my colleagues are also willing, to stay longer than 6 as we get to later.
Okay, members, thank you for your attention today, and
thanks, Mr.